Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with me today. Another glorious Monday morning after a lunar eclipse of a blood moon. I hope you all were listening the last hour to Montgomery Taylor and his show Living Consciously, talking all about the significance of that and what it meant in our lives. It was quite enlightening. I love Monty's show. It always I learned so much from it. And we have a very fascinating show and an interesting guest calling in today in store for you. But of course, let's get started with our quotes of the day from the universe and from Abraham. Let's see what the universe and Abraham have in store for us today. From the universe. Did you know that the average person looks 793.7% more attractive when they smile? Wonder how they came up with that number. Not to mention healthier, wiser, slimmer, richer, and cooler. They do. And smiles become things to the universe. We love our quotes from Mike Dooley and the universe. I think a little play on thoughts become things and smiles become things. And of course they do, because the more happiness we put in a particular direction, the more good feelings and good thoughts we put in a specific direction, the more we grease the slides and allow the universe to bring us those very same things. So, of course, smiles become things. A nice quote for the universe. Let's see what Abraham has in store for us today. Ooh, a really short and sweet one from Abraham today. Desire is the beginning of all new creation, Abraham. So it's quite fascinating, because I know from the Buddhist perspective, you know, we're supposed to eliminate desire. Desire is not considered a very good thing in life if you want to achieve nirvana and enlightenment and connection to all that is. But if you look around at the physical world around us, if you look at everything that has come into being in the last millennium and millennium and millennium, it's all come from some form of desire. A desire to make things better for ourselves individually, for our families, for society. And, you know, Abraham talks quite a bit about this, about the idea of contrast, how, you know, when we experience something that we don't want, it helps to clarify for us what it is that we really do want. And we launch, as Abraham says, rockets of desire that we shoot out into the universe, letting the universe know, like, hey, this is what I want in my life. You know, not this other thing. I want this thing. And so really, we're just desire-making machines. We cannot go through life without constantly creating new desires. I mean, you just walk out of your house, and if you go on the subway and it's crowded and there's no seats, you have a desire for a seat. And if somebody pushes you, you have a desire not to be pushed. And if you were rushing because you didn't have time to be breakfast, you have a desire for food. And if your boss gives you a hard time, you have a desire to have either a better boss or to be doing something different. And if you're not doing what you really love to do, you probably have a big desire to be doing something different. And when a good friend calls you and you reconnect, you have a desire to have an even stronger connection with them. And on and on and on and on. Almost everything that we experience in life gives us either a desire to have more of it or a desire to have less of it in our lives. And whether it comes from experiencing contrast or from experiencing the very things we've said we've wanted, they've both launched desire for us. Now, I mean, even, and in some ways it really is a contradiction or a paradox, even the Buddhists who say, you know, you should disavow yourself of all desire, they have a desire for nirvana and enlightenment and beingness. They have a desire not to have desire, if that's what they believe it takes. And again, you know, they're very different sects of Buddhists. I'm not saying all Buddhists are like this. But it, even that thought of releasing all attachment to desire is a desire. So you really can't get away from desire. Personally, I think we need to just kind of let go of the attachment to the outcomes or attachment to the ways in which what we're desiring can come to us so that we allow the universe, you know, to have in its infinite capacity and infinite imagination, allow things to come to us in ways we've never even thought of. But that's a different story. So, two wonderful quotes from the universe and from Abraham. Let's all remember, smiles become things, and that desire is the beginning of all new creation. So I say, smile at everything you want to create, and you'll help it to come to you that much quicker, sooner, easier, in the flow. Yes. A wonderful, wonderful quotes to start off our Monday with. I hope you enjoy them. We'll have more for you next week, of course. And now it is my extreme pleasure to welcome Merrick Canick, man with a very unusual name. We'll ask him about more about that. Merrick is an empathic psychotherapist, strategic intervention relationship coach, hypnotherapist, and author. Merrick's extensive therapy experiences drawn from his intervention in areas of severe drug and alcohol addictions, torture and trauma counseling, working with victims of wars, and strategic relationship counseling. Merrick continues to explore the legitimate and effective role of mysticism in his practice. His research reveals an undeniable link between new science, therapy, and the paranormal. Merrick proposes that the key to a happier life is relearning how to harness the energy of the mystical. In his new book, I Am a Modern Mystic, So Are You, Merrick invites his readers to awaken their intuition to create positive change in their lives. And it is my pleasure. Thank you, Merrick, for taking the time to come on to the show today.
Thanks very much for having me on your show. Good morning or good afternoon to every old the listeners. It's my pleasure, and I'm humbled and excited at the same time that I can speak at the same time from another part of the world. It's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, I was going to say, yeah. not just good morning or good afternoon, but good evening and good night to our listeners from around the globe, because we are a very international station here. So where are you calling in from, Merrick?
I'm calling from Western Australia.
Western Australia, in wow.
Perth. So it happens that it's after 1 o'clock here. I don't know how these things work in a mystical way. And that we can talk about, talk to each other at the same time. Although practically we are separated by thousands and thousands of miles. I found this fascinating every time I come, seize of my amazement. I understand that this is due to mysticism of technology, but I'm still amazed.
Yes. Well, you know, I believe it was Arthur C. Clarke, or maybe it was Isaac Asimov, who said that any highly advanced technological civilization is almost indistinguishable from magic.
Yes, I fully believe it. I think that what we believe is magic, it's until we understand it a little bit better. But when we achieve something, and we're still amazed how we were able to achieve it, how we were able to tap into it and make it real. That fascinates me, what humans are capable of.
Right. So Merrick, I have to really ask you, because you know, the former owner of this station, his name was Giorgio Rapetti. He was an Australian from Sydney, and I got pretty used to Giorgio's accent, and I'm pretty sure that accent that I am hearing over the airwaves is not an Australian accent, and Merrick is not really a very Australian name. So what part of the world do you originally hail from?
Well, my name is Australian. I've lived in Australia for 35 years, and I've lived in a different part of the world as well. But originally, that name, and I come from Poland.
Uh-huh.
And as you might recall, we had a conversation and my latest travel that I was calling you from Europe, from Poland. I was doing a little bit of a tour there.
Right.
And translating my book with the help of translator into Polish as a next step of development of my mission.
Yes, wonderful. Well, yes, I'm playing devil's advocate so that our audience can learn all about you. So I'm just curious, in the next couple of minutes before we go to our first commercial break, of what inspired you to become a therapist? Because, you know, that's not a field that necessarily attracts a lot of people. You know, not too many people, especially in the United States, who like think, oh yeah, I like, when I grow up, I want to be a therapist, because, like, you know, that's how I'm really going to impact the world and make millions of dollars. You know, it's not really kind of one of those things. You know, most parents don't encourage their kids to, you know, go into the social services. So I'm just curious, what kind of drew you to this field?
I think it happened organically, and it happened as a calling. That's something that that happened to me that I still can't explain how I gravitated to it. Because the previous 20 years I've spent as a professional photographer, and that was also an exciting journey, where I thought that that would be my life calling. But the universe had a different plan for me. And I have gravitated somehow to that realm of therapy. And quite organically, really. One thing led to another, and I found myself back at university and doing one course after another, and being more and more enchanted with the whole idea of interacting with people, which I've always have done in the past. And now I can see, when I'm reflecting back, that my involvement with photography was actually directly linked to my later development of my new therapeutic career.
I see. So when you went back to college, did you didn't go back with sort of the specific intention of becoming a therapist, but maybe more general, and then you just happened to take some classes in psychology and psychotherapy?
Yes, that's right. As I said, one thing led to another. I meet people that actually I've met them in a quite unassuming circumstances, and then there were people the dean of philosophy and ethics at the university, and suggested that after our conversation that maybe I should pick up one unit. Then one unit led to another unit and another unit, and then I to one degree and the next degree, and so I've graduated with my master's and with my profound interest in mysticism.
Okay. Yeah. So when we come back to break, why don't we talk about, you know, what kind of drew you from just psychotherapy into sort of the realm of the mystical, and then how those two interests have melded for you over the years?
Sure.
Okay, wonderful.
I'll be happy to.
Wonderful. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour is Mira Kanik, talking all about the mystical and the therapeutic. So everybody, please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
What are the latest travel trends? How can travel be a part of your overall health and wellness plan? This is William Paris, lifestyle travel consultant, and your host on Travel and Wellness Today. Join me on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time for travel chat, travel tips, and travel news updates. That's on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're talking with Mira Kanik. It sounded from what you said before in the last segment that it was actually while you went back to school and were starting to be a therapist that you began, your interest in the mystical and the paranormal began to be developed even before you graduated. Is that accurate or...?
Yes, that's correct. However, the transition from the time of photography, and that already something was happening there, where when I was working with my photographers, they worked for me, with my makeup artist, and they were observing that the way I'm shooting is and choosing colors to complement the people that were in a photography, at the photography session, there was a certain way that I was doing it. I was quite unconscious about that. And they were inquiring about why do I use these colors? Why do I pose these people like this? And how I'm getting those results, you know, in a portraiture. And I started to ponder, thinking, you know, that something going on here that that maybe I'm not quite aware, not quite conscious about. So when I gravitated into university and started to study psychology and human behavior and psychotherapy, I started to understand that there is so much more about a human person that I've ever imagined. And what more was that the first times when I started to collaborate in therapeutic groups where people were affected by drugs and alcohol and severe difficulties in the relationships. Every time when that started to happen, I observed that there is some kind of energy that's being exchanged in the room. I couldn't put the finger on it, but I knew that there's something something going on there that was just fascinating.
It was just kind of something that you intuitively picked up on, but didn't really necessarily have a logical understanding of what was going on.
That's correct. I didn't even want to employ my head, so to speak, you know, just to think too much about it, because I was afraid that this is going to go away, this is going to finish. So I thought, well, my gut feeling is to just let it flow, and for me, just basically remove myself. I couldn't remove myself from the room, but remove myself as a person in the room and allow this energy to flow.
Right. So kind of turn into more of a role of an observer of what was going on, as opposed to the instigator of what was going on.
Yes, absolutely. So my role, I quickly discovered that my role would be just to help to engage, so people can start collaborating. That was in the groups and one-on-one, or maybe with couples. Mm-hmm. And then basically remove myself from it and let that energy flow. It was just an amazing experience, and I thought, well, what is this? What is? I was wondering, what is this? Is the other therapists, do they experience the same thing? Mm-hmm. So that led me to another step, to actually research and interview other therapists, and that eventuated in my master's thesis, where it was titled Mysticism in Counseling and Hazard Experience by Professional Therapists.
Ah, so you actually studied other therapists and how they applied mysticism or experienced mysticism in their own therapeutic practice.
Yes, that's right, because I was wondering, is this me, or this is something that everyone possesses? And as it turned out to be, that yes, it was confirmed that people were observing the same thing.
Ah, and when you say observing the same thing, that this mystical stuff, can you give us maybe one or two quick examples of how that would show up in a therapeutic practice?
Yes, a part of different accounts that people have, like a spontaneous amazement or some kind of a spontaneous aha moments, this type of thing. This happens in my practice on a regular basis, and this I've noticed that only is possible where people are willing to collaborate on another level and allowing themselves to go into that realm and really focus on that one thing that's being collaborated on. Because basically, when I meet people in my therapy practice, they all come with the same question, what is veiled under the different entities. Some people might be bereaved, some people might have problems in relationships, some people might have problems with addictions, but they all come and they ask about the same thing. How can I be happy? And from my research, you know, into philosophy, that I'd like to link to, you know, ancient philosophy with modern psychotherapy and then modern new physics that confirms a lot of this mystical amazing things that going on in subatomic environment. Then I found that if Mr. Aristotle says that the function of every human person is to be happy, and people constantly coming and asking about the same thing, there's got to be something in it. It means that there is something, some kind of a pain that we're all experiencing, and we're looking to come to our natural state of being. So I've come to the realization that perhaps my mission in life in this therapeutic calling, so to speak, it would be just to assist people to alleviate their pain.
And so I'm wondering if maybe you can give our audience an example of maybe just something that happened in one specific therapeutic session that really kind of highlights this of you know, I mean, you've worked with people with extreme trauma, you know, victims of war and torture. I mean, those are tough things. I mean, I know here at our own wellness center, and, you know, my wife is a psychotherapist, and she's dealt with people with, you know, childhood abuse and all kinds of horrible things. And it's not easy for them to get past, you know, what's happened to them, especially when it's a severe trauma. So can you give an example of just, you know, just one example before we go to break about, you know, something that happened and sort of the how you saw the mystical side of things intervening?
Yes. On several occasions, especially what comes to my mind is collaborating with asylum seekers that were coming from war-torn country, mm-hmm. Countries like Iraq, Afghanistan. I had a particular person, a lady. She was severely traumatized. Mm-hmm. She was tortured, and just horrific stuff happened to her. Mm-hmm. And she was of Islamic faith, and mm-hmm. When she came to Australia, she was very locked in, and no one was able to communicate with her. When she first saw me, she came to me, and we were talking through the interpreter. Mm-hmm. Of course, we were not able to talk in English. I would not be able to speak her language. She would not be able to speak mine. And she had a huge resentment towards men, and so it took a little bit of time for us to actually engage. Right. And through that interpreter, we were able to communicate, but we would not be able to communicate fully, because sometimes the words will be lost in translation. Mm-hmm. So I had to think about some kind of a device or some kind of a way of communicating rather than through words. And that the moment I decided to go into this what I call mystical realm, something started to change. And again, I have observed a profound difference in her dominion, in her attitude, in her she herself was saying that she doesn't understand what happened to her. She didn't know what was causing, but she also said that there was something that was going on in the room that she could not say exactly what it was, but she said she'd never experienced anything like it. She would be open to talk about her horrific experiences. Mm-hmm. Experiences. He previously was not even able to shed the tears, to cry. She was open, completely open, and she was she from her report, I would never know until she actually gave me the feedback. She said that what happened, it was, she called it that it came from God. So she could not verbalize it, you know, what was actually going on. There was this mystical some kind of a going into the trust of some sort, some kind of a a realm that she only remembers as a some kind of a divine intervention.
Interesting. Okay, so I want to kind of get into a little bit of what you mean by, like, yourself going into the mystical, sort of how you invoke it in your sessions, and then we should really also start to talk about your book a little bit and what was the motivation behind that. So let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, let's really talk about, you know, what do you mean by invoking the mystical, and what is your process for doing that, okay?
Okay.
Sounds good. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. And of course, if you'd like to call in and ask your own questions of Mirik or myself, our call-in number is 877-480-4120. We'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking with mystical psychotherapist and author Merrick Canik. So, Merrick, in the example you gave us last segment, you spoke about how you worked with this woman who, you know, had suffered extreme torture and trauma. And you said how in the session you invoked the mystical. What exactly do you mean by that? I mean, I understand the experience that the woman had, that she felt it was something divine, but what exactly how did you perceive what you did during that session?
This is a very good question, because mysticism cannot be easily described, can be experienced. But shine a light a little bit on the subject, it's in waiting. It is in waiting and anticipating. It's waiting for that moment to arrive, allowing that mystical like a mist come upon us. When I'm in the therapy with my clients, and also outside of the therapy, because I'd like to emphasize the fact that we all are capable of tuning into that realm. Mm-hmm. So first of all, in a therapeutic environment, it's probably a little bit maybe easier, because there is that 60 minutes or so of time specifically designed for a collaboration. And so the person is completely isolated from outside noises, from bills, from work, from other things that distract of focusing. So perhaps it's an opportunity to sit down and calm down and allow this mystical energy just come through. We can all experience this. We can all experience this because we all have that capacity. I know that now, after my research, that everyone has got capacity to be able to tap into that energy. So first of all, it would be an allowing to stop and allow, just like a fashion when we stop and are allowing ourselves to go into the meditative state. It takes a little bit of time before we actually invite the mystical, we invite the divine. It's almost like a mystical is that kind of an energy that's almost like shy, that it doesn't really want to come when there is a noise, when there is a disturbance.
A good friend of mine describes it as, you know, like there's a sleeping baby in the room. And so you want to be gentle and kind to it, because if you're loud and abrasive, it's just going to hide away.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly the feeling. So first of all, we need to allow and just invite that energy. Mm-hmm. Like step on the toes, just like around the baby.
And so now this is not necessarily something that you learned from studying with a master. This is just something that kind of came to you naturally.
Yes, absolutely. That's something that awareness came naturally. The background was interaction with people. Mm-hmm. And no one has ever actually taught me in the course of my psychotherapy studies about the mysticism. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I was very, very lucky and very daring to be able to propose such a master thesis that at first my professors, you know, they didn't know what I was talking about, but somehow I put forward, you know, the proposal, and it seems like everyone, students and professors, they were interested in that, but they didn't know what it was, but it was surely interesting, so I pursued with that. So yes, it was very much intuitive, and that's what this is the whole idea about: engaging your intuition.
And so I'm just curious, because I've had many healers and spiritual teachers and people on the show. When you're in a session with somebody, I mean, do you call upon any spiritual beings or entities in the back of your mind, or are you just sort of staying present and being still and just allowing whatever is going to show up to show up?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because out of respect to my client, to people that I meet, I don't know what cultural or religious background or philosophical background they come from. Mm-hmm. So I would not allow myself to intersect with some kind of a suggestion, or because even if I was calling out for something that perhaps I might believe in, I don't know if they will be congruent with my clients. I don't know if it will be fully respected. Of course, I'm not an expert in other cultures. I can work with other cultures, of course, but I'm not an expert in their understanding and in their philosophy. Mm. So instead of calling in particular entity, I allow being aware that energy, from wherever that energy comes from, will come and will be picked up by the person, however they want to understand it, however they want to make sense out of it. Probably there's no need to make sense out of it. Probably it's just the best is just to allow yourself to go into that energy, because it just feels good. It feels good and feels very natural.
Right.
But what I'd like to add here, that there is an awareness that there is a positive energy, but also there is sometimes a very negative energy. I'm not a psychic, but I know that people talking about it, that they can sense the different kinds of those levels of energy. I mm-hmm. can only say that when I was working with some people, they were heavily addicted to drugs, and especially there was one occurrence when there was this person, very nice person, young person, just addicted to heavy drugs. Right. And somehow I felt when he came to my office, he came to my room, that he carried this kind of a different kind of energy. And I would describe it like graphically, I would say it was a dark cloud as opposed to light and flourishing, joyful energy. Mm-hmm. Because what I'd like to add here, Sam, also that people may be bereaved, people might be impacted by severe trauma, but but that doesn't mean that they carry a negative energy.
Right.
I found it's just on the contrary.
Right, right. And they don't have to have trauma, and they can be carrying a negative energy around.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So, what was the... What kind of led you to decide to write this book, I Am a Modern Mystic?
Because I already started to investigate this whole phenomena while I was still at university. I thought perhaps I would extend on this after practicing and make a little bit more in-depth research on that. Because I knew that this kind of a research will be helpful. Will be helpful for people that are looking for that piece of happiness. And maybe if they look at this situation where how to find the best way to happiness, the different things for different people.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of talking about ways to get to happiness. We've got many, many leaders and representatives like Dalai Lama or perhaps people like Tony Robbins and Viktor Frankl, you know, and mm-hmm. all these wonderful right. people throughout ages that are suggesting the roads to happiness. But if I have stumbled on something, and I suspect I have, maybe if I can contribute as a little drop into the ocean, and if we all can do this, just a little drop by drop, into that ocean of sometimes of confusion, maybe we will be able to collaborate and on our way to a better world.
I see. So, but the title of your book is "I Am a Modern Mystic." I get it. You are a modern mystic, but the subtext is also "So Are You." And what do you mean by that?
Yes. Well, I believe that if this something like this can happen to me, mm-hmm. it probably can happen to other people. And my research confirmed that we all have the capacity to enter into this special kind of a realm, this intuitive realm.
Mm-hmm.
Mysticism traditionally and historically was kind of reserved to special kind of people,
right.
People that has special kind of connection with the divine, with the creation. But I thought perhaps maybe we all have this capacity, and it has been confirmed. And I thought that perhaps if I look at the same phenomena and look for the capacity of every human person, each of us wants to self-actualize, we have to have all these ingredients. We all have to have all these ingredients of being able to tap into divine, into the creativity, because being a mystic, it is seemingly something mysterious, but maybe it isn't. Maybe it's just that thing that we all have, because being a mystic, it's to me, it's just it's neither have a special faith or belief or dogma. It's like each of us, we are exposed to truth and understanding. We want to seek truth. We want to belong. We want to belong to the nature, to the creation. To
mm-hmm.
We want to be part of this whole wonderful system, so we naturally somehow pursue consciously or maybe subconsciously in our search for meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And so being a mystic, meaning that being a modern mystic, meaning that we pursue our life, we look into that insight that will allow us to have more happier life. So maybe from the physiological point of view, maybe instead of spending too much time in our brains, perhaps we can allow our heart to play a little bit greater role. And I've got something to say about heart. Quite an interesting fact. If that's okay.
Why don't we do this?
That actually has got a very mystical realm about itself. We just think about heart that might be just a pump that supports our body. But the very, very interesting facts are that the heart is the center of our whole universe, of our being. When you ask yourself what's more important, brain or the heart, when it's very hard to make this distinction. However, if we take into consideration some facts, for example, the heart can live without the brain cannot live without the heart. And what comes to my mind is that in the fourth week of our human development, when the brain is nothing but is just a hollow tube, and no organs of any kind are being developed by that stage, our heart, yours and mine and everyone else's, for some reason, somehow, just goes with the first beat, goes boom, without any help, without any assistance, the heart is self-initiating. I find it fascinating.
Yeah. Okay. Let's hold that thought, and when we come back, this is our last break of the show. Maybe you can give our audience some advice on how they can bring the more mystical into their everyday lives, and how they can learn to be just take the first baby steps into being modern mystics themselves. Okay.
Okay.
Wonderful. So everybody, you're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Dude. Transforming Tuesday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com. It's the Dudes of Disruption.
The Dudes of Disruption is a new show geared toward the global tribe of disruptors who are committed to interrupting the automatic ways of their lives so they go out and leave their mark on the world powerfully.
Consider every Tuesday night, 8 to 9 Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com, forever disrupted. The Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatic.
Dude.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour has been Mirek Kanik, author of I Am a Modern Mystic, So Are You. So, Mirek, somebody meets you and they're like, they're curious, they're interested, they want to bring more of however you want to call it, the divine, the mystical, the paranormal, the spiritual into their lives. How do you recommend people usually start? What's a good way just to get somebody going who doesn't really have much of a background in this, but feels called towards it?
Yes, I think probably the easiest way is to start as close to yourself as possible. We were talking about heart. Mm-hmm. And I think this is probably the closest thing that we can explore to and channel through into the mystical. Perhaps if I may, maybe I can give a little gift to the listeners that they can use this small, very simple method that can be used anywhere at any time because we carry our hearts everywhere we go. And it's just not figurative, it's not just poetic statement, but also it's true that our heart is the center of us, that it keeps us company from the very, very start to the very, very end. And what I'd like to do, if I may, will take only a few minutes. It will be my gift to the listeners.
Okay.
If you'd like to just make yourself comfortable, you can practice this with your eyes open or closed. Of course, if you're driving, it's probably a good idea to have your eyes open.
Keep them open, yes.
And if you're sitting in a chair, you might just sit comfortably with your arms uncrossed, uncross your legs, and just release all the tension in your body. You can do it standing up. You can be sitting down. Anyway, any pose that you prefer. And now I would like you to bring your attention to your heart and focus on the center of your chest and your heart and space around it. Just keep focusing on your heart just for one moment. Just easy. You might take refreshing breaths. And as you're breathing in and breathing out, just imagine that your breath is coming in and out of your heart space. Let's imagine the air is coming to your heart, swiveling around your heart, and then slowly going back out. And now, I invite you to add a positive heart feeling. Just recall time that you felt good. The situation that maybe your heart was filled with joy and happiness, excitement, peacefulness, gratitude. Release the situation now. Your heart remembers. Your heart remembers the same event like your brain remembers by images, but your heart remembers the feeling. So I want you to really tap into those emotions that you are experiencing. The key is to shift from your head to your heart, from thinking to feeling that emotion. Just imagine that you're reliving this moment. Continue the heart focus, breathing in and out. Recall your positive memory now. Just the one moment. I know it was many, but just one moment. Trusting your heart. Beautiful emotion. Stay there for just a few more seconds. Allowing yourself to invite that positive energy, that mystical energy, where from it all begins. And when you're ready now, you can slowly bring your attention back to wherever you are. You can open your eyes if they are closed. Hold on to the way you feel right now as you go about the rest of your day. By recalling this positive emotion, you can regulate your emotions in the moment to stop drain that emotionally charge or the situation that have on your system. Instead, adding a good energy to your system. And you can practice this anytime and anywhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Kanik. That was wonderful, Mirek. So if people would like to learn more about you or find out information about your book, is there a website or how can they get in touch with you?
Yes. My website is mirekkanik@gmail.com. Excuse me. That's my email. Mm-hmm. It's MirekKanik, one word, .com.
@gmail.com.
So it's @gmail.com, or the website is www.mirekkanik.com.
Okay. Gotcha.
So that's MirekKanik. And I'll be very happy to answer any questions, any emails. I'll be very happy to interact. And, of course, my book is also available by visiting my website. It's also available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And also I have a book trailer that it's very easily accessible. It's only 1 minute, and it tells you a little bit about the book, something perhaps what we've talked about, but in a nice, concise and a funny way. And just 1 minute, just by going to YouTube, and you can just go and type, "I am a modern mystic," Mirek Kanik, a book trailer, and it just comes right at you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Mirek, thank you so much for staying up so early in the morning for us over there in Australia, in Perth. And we really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. And I wish you much success and much good fortune in your work in helping people and helping people heal.
Thank you very much, Sam. I appreciate you inviting me to the show. And thank you very much for giving that opportunity. And it's just absolutely wonderful to be able to do this from another side of the globe. Maybe soon we'll be broadcasting from Mars. For what we heard today, it's not that far away.
No, hopefully not that far away at all. Thank you very much, Mirek. And everybody, thank you for listening. This has been the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We'll be back next week with another wonderful show, this time talking a little bit more on the practical side. Not so much this wasn't practical, but on nonprofits, talking to the founder of a nonprofit called Fist to Five about empowering people locally. So everybody, please, take care, and we will talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you on a path of consciousness or spirit? Is personal or spiritual empowerment important to you? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and I am here to answer your questions and bring you experts in all areas of life to raise your awareness and support you in your evolution. Tune in at my new time, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on www.talkradio.nyc. That's Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
Dude. Transforming Tuesday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com. It's the Dudes of Disruption.
The Dudes of Disruption is a new show geared toward the global tribe of disruptors who are committed to interrupting the automatic ways of their lives so they go out and leave their mark on the world powerfully.
Consider every Tuesday night, 8 to 9 Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com, forever disrupted. The Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatic.
Dude.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.